As most of you know, we created this travel from home movement to give everyone the joy of travel every single day, even if we're stuck at home. And for today's live event, I'm so excited that you'll get to hear from a travel industry insider and expert that I admire a ton, Pauline Frommer. Pauline is the co-president of Frommer Media and editorial director of their guidebooks and website. The company was actually founded in 1957 by her father, making them one of the original pioneers of the travel guidebook. So Pauline, your guidebooks have helped me navigate at least a few dozen countries around the world, and your blog posts are one of my go-to sources for real travel news. So thank you so much for that, and thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. I should say, because I'm co-president, who am I co-president with? With my dad. It's a father-daughter business. He's 90, but he's incredibly sharp. He's a whiz on the computer. He and I actually were the founders of Frommers.com together well back before we re-owned the Frommer Guides. So it's not just my good guidebooks, it's his too. And all our authors, we really are so grateful to the people we have all around the world doing our guidebooks. We couldn't do this without them.
Yeah, I love those guidebooks. Actually, one of the last and hardest things I did on my journey to become much more of a minimalist was donate over 500 books. And that included a few shelves of guidebooks, including many Frommer's books. So hopefully someone else is able to use them now.
Well, it means you need to buy new ones.
Exactly. So right. I'd like to start our conversation off very high level. So I'm obsessed with the psychology and the behavior of the modern traveler. And it's why Andy and I gave our personal cell phone number to the first 250,000 people who signed up for the Trip Scout app. So something we're pretty much very focused on. But Frommer's has been doing, has been guiding travelers since the 50s. And you've been the editorial director for a long time. So I would love to get your perspective. How have you seen the psychology and the behavior of travelers change over the past 10 to 20 years?
Well, to me, it all has to do with the internet. The internet fundamentally reshaped how we saw going out in the world. I mean, you had a much larger cohort of people going out and not coming back. Thanks to the internet, we have a lot of digital nomads, people who can work online and who don't have to come home. And so that's reshaped how we think of travel. You also have fewer gatekeepers like me. Frommer Guides used to be the one source of information along with our competitors, Lonely Planet, Fodors, and the like. And now anybody who has an internet connection can give their opinion on where you should go and what you should see. And that has fundamentally reshaped what people see and how people see that. Now, a lot of that is very pure and good and terrific, and we're all for it. But we've also seen a lot of people getting pushed this way and that by marketers, because you have a lot of travel content disguised as journalism that isn't. And I think it's gotten harder and harder to tell what is and what isn't. But in terms of how people travel, because the world has gotten so many more travelers, because this has become so much more a common part of our lives, or it had before coronavirus, we've seen a lot of places getting loved to death, sadly. Over-tourism in the last 20 years has become a huge problem. And so the smarter travelers had been going to places in the off-season, going to less well-known destinations, and working with that issue. But a lot of us were stuck traveling to places where we'd be elbow to elbow with others, and that undercut the joy of travel to a certain degree. Not totally. I'm not a person who puts down anybody for going to Disney World or Venice or Paris, because those are great destinations. But they had been much more difficult to navigate because of the crowds in recent years.
Yeah, that's a great segue to something that has been on my mind a lot lately. So to your point, travel has become a lot more accessible for many people, and that is a great thing. I think you and I both believe in how powerful travel can be to open minds and connect people with different cultures, and the world's a much better place. And when people do that, and we sure need a lot more of that, now, coronavirus excluded. But that's also, to your point, opened up a few issues. So one, over-tourism is having a significant impact on the environmental and societal aspect of many destinations. And then it's also given rise to this, you know, flash tourism mindset where so many people are just trying to go through their Instagram bucket list to try to keep up with their friends and check things off their, you know, their to-do list. But we've never really had just like a complete global pause where as an industry and as travelers, you know, we just get to pause and reset how we travel. So when we eventually do go back to traveling again, what is your hope? And also what is your advice just to make sure we get it right? And we both, you know, maximize our own experience and travel in a way that does that, but also from an over-tourism perspective, does it in a way that preserves the places we love and travel for generations to come?
This may sound odd, but I kind of see coronavirus as being part of climate change and part of the issues we've been having with the environment and us putting too much stress on the environment. Nobody quite knows where it came from. And as we come out of this, I don't think we'll have as many travelers, not because of death rates, but because of the economy. So the issues with over-tourism, I don't think are going to be issues for the next 5 years, perhaps, maybe less. Maybe I'm being overly pessimistic. But I do think the economy is going to stop a lot of people from being able to travel with the same ease that they did in the past. I mean, there's some estimates that 50% of hotels could close. Definitely some airlines are going to go belly up. Not so much the American carriers. They seem to be in good shape. I'm talking Norwegian seems to be on the brink. There are some others. And that could increase the price of airfares. I mean, we've been living in a really blessed time. We didn't know how blessed we were with how inexpensive it was. And people would always say to me, you know, Frommer's started with Europe on $5 a day. You couldn't travel on $5 a day now, could you? And I always answered, you absolutely could, thanks to couch surfing, thanks to global freeloaders, thanks to ride sharing and all of these incredible tools we had that allowed us to travel so cheaply. I don't know going into this, but my whole family tells me I tend to go very dark. So maybe I'm going too dark on this. But looking forward, I don't think we're going to have to worry about over-tourism for a while because I think there'll be less people traveling. But I do want to make sure that we're supporting the mom and pop businesses. That's so important. We're looking with this stimulus, what happened there with all of these big publicly traded companies getting the money that the mom and pops needed. Makes me very worried, and very few people in the travel industry are getting bailed out. And so I want to make sure that when we get back to traveling, that we support the little restaurants that have been in the same family for generations, or that have been started by a recent cooking school graduate rather than the big chains. I want us to be going to the little mom and pop hotels rather than the big chains. Maybe not doing all-inclusives, because those really hurt local communities. I'm hoping we can be a little bit more conscious of the importance of our travel dollars, and they're very important economically worldwide. By some estimates, one out of every 11 people on the planet Earth work in the travel industry. So I don't see travel as a trivial pursuit. It's something that, on a personal level, is the greatest education you can get. It's something that opens your mind and makes you a better voter, makes you a voter for peace with other nations. But also on a macro level, we're going to be in trouble if people don't start traveling again. I just wonder if they will.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. I would love to double tap into that. So, you know, I think business travel is especially going to get hit. You know, I just think as so many companies now are realizing, you know, Zoom works really well, or they're going to be slashing their budgets. And it seems like you have a much darker perspective on how leisure traveler rebounds than I do. But either way, it means that there are going to be some major systemic changes in the travel industry. And so I'm curious, like, after Like, what are some of the big changes you see coming, and how do you think that's going to affect, from airlines or hotels, like our, as a leisure traveler, our ability to have availability or the cost of that?
I think it's going to be a boon for Airbnb and for the those sharing accommodation services, because I do think we're going to lose a lot of hotels, and you don't have the costs to run an Airbnb. Some people do. I mean, obviously, some people have extra homes that are tied to mortgages, and those will disappear. But the people who were welcoming travelers in one room with their house, that will probably continue. I think strange things like spas and other things that require high touch in the travel experience may be gone for a bit. We have an article on Fromers.com about who will be traveling. Because the United States's coronavirus response has been so chaotic, and because we're so behind so many other places in terms of testing, my author, Jason Cochran, who's the brilliant editor-in-chief of Fromers.com, he's writing that he thinks the rest of the world will get to travel before us Americans, because the rest of the world is going to be scared. We are the hotspot right now. It's just like we closed our doors to China. He's worried that for the foreseeable future, the doors may be closed to Americans because we just won't have the testing. We won't have the reliability. People won't know that we're not carriers. As I said, I get very dark.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. And I'm trying to keep a business afloat that promotes travel, and I love travel, but I am worried.
No, it's and understandable. So let's get a little lighter for a moment.
Okay. Sorry.
Before COVID-19, it had to be such a lovely temptation for you to have a constant look at what recommendations are coming in for nearly everywhere in the world. And so just purely for personal trips, like, how do you possibly decide where to go next?
Well, unlike many people who write about travel, I do a radio show. And because of that, I have a license from the government that says I can't take payola, which means I never, ever took press trips. I never took free travel. And so a budget had a lot to do with where I was going. I would often go for where I'd get a good deal. But then I was also being swayed by the fact that I have teenagers. They're going to be flying the coop. So last December, we went to Tanzania because I thought, when would they permit us to have a big adventure with them in the future? I don't know if that will happen. And that was an extraordinary trip of a lifetime. So it's partially what's on my radar and what seems really appealing. It's partially what's affordable or where I can get a deal. I'll often follow the deals. My husband and I once went to Brussels because the late great Sabena Airlines had a deal where you paid, I think it was $3.99 for airfare from the United States and three nights hotel. Wow. And so we just went to Brussels because it was such a great deal. Those are some of the things that guide me.
We had Scott Keys from Scott's Cheap Flights on a couple days ago. And what he said was, he's like, everyone looks at where they want to go, when they can go, and then tries to figure out how much it costs. He's like, if you just do that in the opposite, where you just say, how much does something cost? When is a good time? When can I go? And then figure out the destination last based on the price and availability.
Right.
Travels so much more and so
yeah, and I do. I should say I do get to travel with my radio show. We'll often do broadcasts from different places. So because of that, I've been to Traverse City recently in Montreal, and I was just in the Dominican Republic, which was lovely and safe. It seems like ancient history, but recently people were nervous about going to the Dominican Republic, wrongly so. But
yeah, so I'm curious for you, just because so many people turn to you for this kind of question, like when you decide on where you're going for that next trip, how do you prepare for it?
I like to read novels about the destination. So before I went to India, I read Midnight's Children by Salman Rushdie. I read that silly book about Michelangelo, but it really brings it to life. I'm blanking on the name. I'll often read books of history. I'll watch movies set in the destination. I'll look at our guidebooks, of course. I think that one of the biggest mistakes a lot of travelers make is they assume that there'll be somebody in the destination who can tell them about what they're seeing in a way that really brings it to life. Mm-hmm. And maybe 50% of the time you get that. You don't always get that. But when you bring something to the destination, when you've read about its history, when you've read a book set there, I mean, Poland, I went to Poland a couple of years ago, really to trace my ancestry. My grandmother had escaped there in the 1920s, actually, from pogroms. And I'd only heard terrible things about Poland. You know, I'm of Jewish heritage. It was a place where Jews were attacked. I mean, they were thrilled to get out of there. But I started reading about the history of Poland, and I realized, well, they were attacking because this was a culture that was attacked over and over and over. Everybody beat up Poland through the centuries. And so I got to see it through that lens too, got to learn about the history, got to dig in, so that when I got there, I brought to the trip so much more than if I had just gone with the chip on my shoulder that my grandmother gave me.
Yeah. So my family were all political refugees from Poland in the 80s.
Oh,
so
my
father was one of the leaders of the Solidarity movement to try to overthrow.
Have you been to Gdansk?
I have. I've been to Poland.
Incredible.
20 times. Yeah. Yeah. And both of them were thrown in jail for a year and then came to the US. But being stuck in the middle between Germany and Russia is not a very good geographical place to be.
No, they did. I don't want to sugarcoat anything. Yeah. I mean, you know, they were all for killing the Jews in World War II, and a lot who came back from the camps were also attacked. I mean, they have a lot to answer for, but it's not all bad, and many beautiful things to see and do in Poland, and extraordinary.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I actually did just because I've always gone and visited my grandma, and like stayed with my dad who lives there now. But I actually did more of a family heritage exploration recently, just because so much of history is just not talked about. And I had found out that my great grandfather and grandmother actually had a farm in rural Poland and helped hide many Jews that were escaping. And there was one couple, or and they weren't even a couple at the time, but there's one man, one woman who they hid in, fake haystacks for nearly 2 years.
Wow.
And then after World War II, they were able to move to Israel. And so, once I started asking these questions, my family was like, oh yeah, here's letters from those people. And I'm just like, how would you not talk about these kinds of things? Yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, no, that I love taking that approach before travel. And I feel like reading books, especially when it's a historical context or a biography, like when I was in South Africa, I spent a lot of time and I, read A Long Walk to Freedom while I was staying in Soweto. And it just like, I felt like completely changed my perspective and showed me so much about the place. And I try to do that every time. And I hope that now that we have that time where we can't travel, that we think about the places we're going to go next and really just slow down. And I think so many people, we talked about this on previous calls, but so many people are just going to feel like they need to make up for lost time. And they're just going to like try to bounce around as many places as they can. And I think it's such a great opportunity to just say, you know what? No, I'm going to go slower. I'm going to go deeper. I'm going to read a couple books, watch a few movies that were set there, and just really kind of immerse yourself into that preparation. I think it'll make your experience much more meaningful.
Well, we've been digging into virtual travel on fromers.com. I mean, because it's something that we can maybe do as a service. So great travel movies, great travel podcasts, audio sounds of different places, virtual. There are crazy tours going on right now. I don't know if you know about this. For example, the Faroe Islands has a tour whereby they have a local who goes out into a deserted nature area, and then you, the person taking the tour virtually, get to tell them, okay, jump over that stream, walk here, walk there.
That's really cool.
I thought, points for creativity, Faroe Islands. And then there's all the Airbnb experiences those are wacky, like commune with rescue goats, and learn to tap dance, meditate with a Buddhist monk. I mean, there's some fascinating things. So we're trying to cover it all on Frommers.com so that even though we're all away, hidden in our own little homes, we can still commune. Actually, do you know about this Facebook group called A View From My Window? It is.
I have heard of it, but I haven't checked it out yet.
It is the most beautiful thing. It's people all over the world showing the view from their window, and they'll often talk a little bit about it. Like there was a nurse in New York who she has a much different view because she's having to stay away from her whole family. She doesn't want to infect them. And then there was a man in Japan who's looking at a hotel that was just built for the Olympics, and it's eerily quiet now. And everybody around the world is sending greetings, and it's how social media was supposed to be. It's this real community of people being so grateful to see each other's views. And sometimes it's just a plain little garden. So it's not always dramatic views, but that's interesting too. It's a beautiful thing.
That is really cool. I will have to check it out. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons like we started doing this is the reasons we love travel, like getting, you know, connecting with people in different cultures, learning new things, getting outside your comfort zone. A lot of that can be done virtually. It's, you know, it's never going to be the exact same, but there's so much of it that we can do if we're just a little more intentional about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm blessed that I get to be with my teens a little longer. I mean, I didn't want to yank the kid home from college, but I'm really grateful that kind of as adults, we have a different relationship now, and that we're really getting to explore that in depth is an incredible blessing.
So going back to you planning trips, like what do you think is the biggest mistake that people make when planning a trip or actually traveling?
Well, that they don't A, research it in advance, that B, they're guided by fear or fear of missing out. You know, so many people hear about this famous thing or they see a YouTube video and think I have to go and get that exact photo of, you know, that I saw on Instagram or YouTube. And I find that sometimes the best travel experiences is when I get lost and I just wander, because when you get lost, you have to ask for directions. And so then you talk to people, you know, a lot of our Frommers has been around so long that a lot of our readers are older, and a lot of them get scared that if they don't take a tour, that they won't be able to really enjoy the place. And I think if you do your research, if you do your reading in advance, then you can let that go and really just be there.
That's great advice. Yeah. I always tell people just, whenever in doubt, just start walking and wait till something fascinating happens, because it always does. So,
and also to let things work on you. There's a wonderful travel writer named Stephanie Rosenblum. She used to write a lot for the New York Times. And she did an article on how to enjoy a museum. And the way to enjoy a museum is you go into a gallery and you look all around and then you find what attracts you. And you stand in front of that thing for 2 minutes solid, which may not sound like a long time, but it is. Mm-hmm. And you just think about it and you look at it and you see how it affects you. Instead of trying to hit all the sights or seeing everything, you just commune.
So. Yeah, no, that's great advice. So there's one thing I would love to ask you to get really, you know, tangible and actionable, because you're such an expert on the industry and I always love talking to you and I love reading your perspective on what's going on, since you tend to have such an analytical and actionable insights on how things are benefiting or hurting travelers. So I am curious, just like a very simple question to help summarize any of your insights.
Yeah.
Like, what sites do you use to book a flight, hotel, and experiences, and why?
Well, we've done studies on this at Frommers.com. So we had people look through things and we came out up with, it used to be booking.com for hotels. That tends to be where you get the lowest prices. That now has been swept off, or it had been, by Hotels Combined, but those were two sites that I often looked at for hotels. I thought they had depth of offerings and the best prices. For airfares, we used to recommend Momondo. It got slotted into second place by this really obscure site called, oh my goodness, why am I not remembering the site? It's a site that helps you hack fares in a way that I cannot recommend, hidden city fares.
Kiwi?
What is it?
Kiwi?
Not Kiwi.
Skiplagged?
Skiplagged. We found the best prices on Skiplagged, even when we unchecked the box, because I don't think hidden fares is a smart thing to do, because you know you can be denied boarding when you try and go back. But Skiplagged. So I follow the advice of our experts for those.
Yeah, no, those are great advice. I used to do what Skiplagged has done for a long time. Like I wrote an article I was interviewed by Insider for the same topic. But I used to always, like, the way that I would make flights cheaper but also see more cities is I would just I would use alternative routes. So instead of saying I'm going to, you know, Chicago to Cairo, I'd be like, where can I get to cheapest from Chicago across the pond? It's like, wow, to Helsinki, it's really cheap. Yeah. So then, oh wow, Helsinki to Bucharest is almost nothing. And then Bucharest to Athens, almost nothing. And then Athens to Cairo. So when I had more flexibility,
right,
I would just piece that together and often, like, intentionally give myself an extra few days in each place. And then Skiplagged, I thought, did an amazing job of, you know, not when you add that many destinations, but just adding that extra connection that then just automated. So I've used Skiplagged a lot. And I thought you were talking about Kiwi, because what Kiwi often does is they will factor in, like, certain, like, round trips, or if you don't actually make, you know, don't make your connection. And that can be really problematic if you have a return flight that you actually need to take. Because, like, to your point, they'll deny boarding. But if you're just flying one way to somewhere, it doesn't really matter that you don't carry on or that you don't make a round trip. So I've used both to save a lot of money. So good advice. I'll definitely second that. So I'm also curious, since travel is such a major part of your personal life, and this period of quarantine is probably the most outside your comfort zone you've been in a while. And so what are you doing to satisfy your love of travel, and how do you travel from home?
I'm trying to help others travel from home. Frankly, the number of hits to Frommers.com are way down, and we're trying to keep our resources together. So I'm writing two articles or three articles a day. So I'm not having much, I'm having fun because I get to research and I love writing. So I'm mostly writing about virtual travel, but to do that, I have to experience things. Like we did a piece on the best travel movies. So I got to rewatch Monsoon Wedding, which I loved. Do you ever see Monsoon Wedding?
It takes place. I've never seen it.
No. Great movie. It's about a wedding in India, and it shows how romantic an arranged marriage can be, which is really kind of mind-blowing. So I watched Monsoon Wedding. I watched Lost in Translation again. I watched Motorcycle Diaries, which is a beautiful movie. So I watched a bunch of those to write that piece. And I've been doing these wacky virtual tours in order to review them. So that's been fun. I mean, my job is fun in that way, but it's been a lot of work and applying for grants.
Yeah. Well, you've given me some movies to watch this weekend. I have seen Motorcycle Diaries, and it's a great movie.
Yeah.
So your philosophy of spend less, see more really resonates with me. So I have a family, and I'm no longer a backpacker, but I still focus on budget and maximizing my experiences to travel more, not just splurge on one or two trips a year. So as a self-proclaimed proud cheapskate that you are, what are your best cost-saving tips and hacks?
Well, don't think that just because you have a family that a hostel would be out of reach or would be a wrong thing to do.
Oh yeah, I get private rooms in hostels.
Oh yeah, they're great, yeah. And I love the types of hotels or lodging situations where there's a place to go, where you're going to meet other travelers. And sometimes in the really, really fancy places, you don't get that. You get 100%. That in the cheaper places because your room's too small. So you have to go out and meet everybody. So that's a hack. Other ways to save money, public transportation. You meet people, you can talk to people that way. It's a great thing to see and do. I mean, I always think there are certain things you should splurge on and certain things you should be tight-fisted about. And for me, I never want to be too far from what I want to see because I don't want to spend my whole vacation commuting, but I will go to a cheaper place because I'm, you know, mostly when I'm in the place I'm staying, I'm unconscious. So what does it matter how many thread key accounts are in my sheets? You know, I'm going to be dead to the world anyway for those 8 hours. I might as well stay somewhere cheap. Whereas I remember going to Asheville, North Carolina, and I regret it to this day. I was in my 20s. Back then I was an actor, and all the actors in my company, we thought of going to see the Biltmore Estate, which is this grand estate, mm-hmm. but it was very expensive and we didn't go. And instead we just kind of bummed around. And to this day, I regret not going. So for experiences, I will spend the money for those. But you don't necessarily need a guide or a guided tour. I mean, if you get, sometimes that's nice. But so splurge on experiences, splurge on the things that really matter and make a trip.
Could not agree more. A hotel for me, like even though like lovely hotels are so nice, it's just a head in a bed. You're not enjoying it. I'm trying to spend all my time outside of the hotel.
I mean, there are some places where it's really the resort, and so you're there for the vacation. But
well, then that becomes the experience. Right. You know, it's a little bit different. But yeah, we see this all the time with the Trip Scout users, where people will spend more money on one dinner than they'll spend on an entire week's worth of lodging.
Oh, absolutely. I've done that. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think are some of the most underrated destinations that as we get back to traveling that we should that should really be on our radar that we might not be thinking about?
Well, you know, it's funny. With the over-tourism of the world, very few places that I consider underrated, probably somebody who lived nearer to it, went all the time and thought it was overrated. So places like I was blessed in that I got to go to Northern Michigan a bunch of times in the Traverse City and Mackinac Island area to do radio broadcasts. And it's a beautiful area of the country with a great art scene, with lovely restaurants, with the Great Lakes, which are so beautiful and like swimming in the ocean, but without the salt. So that's, I think for a New Yorker, Northern Michigan is underrated and is really great. Mackinac Island. Have you ever been? Do you know about Mackinac?
I do know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no horses there until Pence went, but anyway. So I went to Taiwan. I think that's an underrated destination. Really fascinating culture. Very, very traditionally Chinese in many ways, but in a way that mainland China isn't, because the people in mainland China had to live through the Cultural Revolution, which I think fundamentally hurt a lot of the older people there. So it's not as friendly. It's not as clean as Taiwan. You don't have spitting in Taiwan. You don't have people actually talk to outsiders. Whereas in mainland China, I found it to be a much less friendly society. So you get, so Taiwan, you have, the Taiwanese stole all the best stuff from the Forbidden City and put it in their museum. So to see these extraordinary works of sculpture and art, you need to go to Taiwan, bizarrely enough, because when they were fleeing, they grabbed a lot of loot.
Yeah, I second that. I love Taiwan. So we talk a lot about getting off the beaten path and finding your own experiences while traveling, but how do you balance, you know, doing a lot of research ahead of time and following the advice of guidebooks, but while still experiencing a place for yourself while you're there?
Usually I'd cut the days in half. Often in the morning, I do the thing that I think I should do, the famous museum, the historic house, the dead things, the things that maybe speak of the past, not dead, because they're still vibrant and alive. And I think you're missing out if you go to Paris and you don't go to the Louvre, you know. But you're also missing out if you just don't spend an afternoon wandering through the Bastille district, which is not an area that tourists tend to go to because there aren't any great museums or sites there, with the exception of the Bastille monument where the prison was. But it's this cool, hip area where all the younger Parisians hang out, with lots of great little boutiques and bars and galleries. And so you do that in the afternoon. So you do what you think you should do for half the day, and then you let yourself get lost for the second half.
It's That's great advice. So you're someone who's incredibly thoughtful about your recommendations and advice and preserving the integrity of a place. And, you know, people ask us this with Trip Scout all the time. So I am curious to get your perspective, like with the Frommer's Guides, like how do you deal with the Instagram effect? You know, when you discover some lovely hole in the wall, or perhaps you would put it in the guidebook and now all of a sudden every tourist wants to go there. And obviously like we've seen how on Instagram that will just completely overload a place, but really it comes down to like whenever someone of influence and reach draws attention to a place, which in many cases is fantastic and like much appreciated. But how do you still like preserve, like, do you ever think about that? Like when you're recommending like a tiny hole in the wall that it might cause too much?
I don't think guidebooks have the power that they used to. It's something my father has talked to me about because he had restaurateurs who he recommended and he would say, get this dish. And then they couldn't keep that dish in stock and they would beg him to take the dish out of the book because, you know, it was just too much. But I don't feel like I have that power. It's more of a problem for Instagram, the Instagram effect, I think. And back to the question before, the other thing that's so important to do is reach out to your friends, create a social network where you're going. I will often ask my friends, do you have a friend of a friend in the destination I'm going to who I can take out to dinner? And that's usually one of the highlights of my trip because it's somebody who probably I'm going to like because I like the friend and they've recommended them to me. And it's the way to kind of cut through the barrier that's invisibly between outsiders and the destination. You're just out to dinner with somebody who's local and they're going to tell you things the concierge wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I recommend all the time that people explore their own interests or their own passion, but through another culture. So like I do the same thing where even if I don't have a friend of a friend, I'll find who the leading tech entrepreneurs are in some city. And I'll just reach out to them and say, hey, here's who I am. I'm going to be in town. And it's funny, like if I say that going to New York, people care a lot less. But if I'm in, you know, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, everyone says, absolutely, come on in. I'll introduce you to all my friends. And then, you know, we get to have a really fascinating conversation. And I can understand and appreciate so much of the similarities and differences of our culture just because we're talking about, we also have this very common shared interest that we both know a lot about, but sometimes it's shockingly similar and sometimes it's shockingly different. Just the, you know, the struggles maybe one culture has to deal with versus the other. So,
right.
Yeah, it's
great idea.
So I'm seeing a lot of questions pop up in the Q&A and I'm going to turn it over to Andy to lead some Q&A in just a minute. So if anyone has any questions, drop them in now. I just have a couple more, but a lot of people look at being a travel guide writer as a dream job. So what advice do you have for people who want to make that their career?
You need to move to a place where nobody speaks English if you're looking to work for an English language guide. It's very hard for us to find good writers for our guides in certain parts of the world. I'm worried it's going to get harder in Europe for us because of Brexit. I had mostly British writers embedded in Italy and Spain and Portugal, and a lot of them don't know if they'll be allowed to stay. That being said, my main problem finding writers is finding people who can write well. And in order for you to be hired for a complete book, you have to have published articles. Because I can't trust somebody who hasn't worked with an editor before. I need to know that you'll have the chops to work back and forth, to know what it means to shape something with an editor, to know what it means to write in a certain voice, because we have a specific voice and we have a lot of requirements for our writers.
So we were having a conversation with Chris Burkhard yesterday, who's one of the leading adventure photographers and in the world, and probably, you know, 4 million Instagram followers, has been in film festivals. And one of the things he said, which echoes exactly what you said, he said, no one is just going to hire you because they think you could be right for that job. Like, if you want to start doing a certain type of work, just do it. Start doing it yourself, or, you know, get that experience and show that you have the chops to perform at that level.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's a good segue into you're a travel inspiration to so many, including myself. And so I'm curious, who are your travel inspirations?
Wow. Well, going way back, Mark Twain. No better travel writer ever than Mark Twain saw the world with such blazing humanity and humor. And if you want to be a good travel writer, often when I'm stuck, because I have to write a lot, I'll read him. I'll read Tim Cahill, who's founded Outside Magazine, who's a brilliant writer. Don George, who used to be was it Lonely Planet? Was the San Francisco Chronicles travel person. He's written a book on how to be a travel writer that's excellent. So those are a couple of mine. Let me think. Cheryl Strayed, I think, is one of the best travel writers of our generation. You're asking traveler or travel writer? I'm not sure.
Either one. Just like when you go for travel, inspiration, which I imagine would be more travel writing focus. But yeah, that's.
Yeah. So I guess that's a short list. I'm trying to think who else. There are just some incredibly talented people out there who make travel writing an art, and I try and follow them. Pico Iyer is an incredible writer, especially about Japan.
Yeah. Amazing. So we will turn it over to Andy for Q&A, but I would love to just for some of the people who are newer to travel and are looking to get their next guidebook, and of course, everyone knows Frommer's Lonely Planet, Fodor's, but can you just give the quick, why you're different and why they should pick up a Frommer's guide?
Well, Frommer guides are written by local journalists. We do not, on Lonely Planet has a team of parachute artists who go and they cover a lot of different destinations. That's fine. But we feel that we get the best information from people embedded in the destination who will have eaten at every single restaurant they recommend and a whole slew that they don't. We will have seen all the hotels and gone to every single attraction. We just think we get deeper information that way. Plus our books, frankly, are written for people with limited vacation time. So we are very specific in terms of giving things star ratings, telling the truth, saying this may not be worth your time unless you're a big fan of ships and bottles or whatever the attraction is. We ask our writers to be incredibly opinionated. Because we think that's the only way to help people with limited time travel. And none of our books ever have recommendations that somebody paid to be in there. We are journalists. We're very, very proud journalists. And in that way, we're keeping a lot of journalists working all over the world. I have people who used to work for the great local paper or the great local magazine. A lot of those have shuttered or no, and so they're only working for us now. And so we're very proud of keeping them employed.
Great. And Andy, I will turn it over to you. But before I do, Pauline, I just want to say thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you for spending time with us. And also, I just want to acknowledge and thank you for all the work that you've done and your father has done to help so many people in the world be able to experience places that they may not otherwise ever have felt comfortable or equipped to do. So you've helped a lot of people have experiences that I know would have change their life. So thank you for that. And thank you for also providing that journalistic voice within travel. There's so much noise, so much content marketing, so much clickbait. And so to have that level of integrity and to continue to do that for 60, 70 years as a company as
63, I think now
is really impressive. So thank you for everything you've done for all of us who've used your advice and also for the industry as a whole.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right, Pauline, we have some really good questions, actually. Okay. I'm excited to dive into some of these. So first question I'm going to go to is you mentioned sort of early on, and this is really a fear of mine. As Americans, we're really spoiled by the power of our passport. And that's something that might be a really rude awakening for lots of us after this. A name that I recognize asked the question, and recognize it because I'm married to his daughter. do you envision like some sort of almost like health passport as being something that's necessary to gain you admission into countries going forward?
It's possible. Right now, Emirates Airlines is requiring anybody who takes their plane to take a coronavirus test. They're doing this in the airport of Dubai. So it would not surprise me, especially if this turns out to be a virus where having the antibodies means that A, you're not a carrier, and B, you won't get sick. We don't quite know that yet. It's too new a virus, but that's something that existed in the past and I could definitely see happening for the future.
Yeah, one of the things I keep trying to say right now is, you know, kind of like how I just feel so shocked, you know, my parents will talk about, you know, not wearing seatbelts. I almost predict that, you know, my children will think it's crazy when I say I didn't wear a mask on a plane, you know, and trying to be sort of understanding about how this is gonna, you know, ripple and change the fabric of everything. You know, I think on that one of the things that I find so fascinating about, you know, your story is, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, I have a young child. There's something that I just find like really fantastic about a multi-generational family business and being able to, you know, work and partner, you know, with your father. It also means that you've seen how it's changed and evolved. You know, businesses dream of being decades old. Most don't get to do it. So how have you seen the business change? And have you seen really like the core product of a travel guide change and evolve as the world has evolved with it?
Well, we know that a lot of people can get information in many different places. We're not naive about that. And so we have doubled down on the parts of the books that we think we can do better than anybody on the internet. So that means we've actually doubled down on the itinerary sections of our books, because it's very hard to create an itinerary. And so we give in the books ones for people with different interests, ones for people who only have a certain amount of time in a destination. We think that that kind of holistic view of the internet, of the destination, is much harder to recreate on the internet. So we've doubled down on that. We know that people looking at our books will also get a holistic view of all the options. Rather than just seeing all of these different reviews, they're going to see them in context, in their neighborhoods, and we've tried to do that. We also try to be very, as I said earlier, opinionated and honest. If something isn't worth going to, usually we will say that. We can't cover, we don't say that about hotels and restaurants, because we can't, then our books would be, you know, uncarryable. And I should say we also have ebooks, so you don't have to carry them. We try and we have very smart authors, and we say to them, people have limited vacation times. When you're recommending something, how will that change somebody's life? How will it really make their day better? How will this versus that option work? So we try to say to them, you know, these are people with limited time. Remember that you can't just give everything a thumbs up. You have to say, all right, if you're going to this destination, like say you're going to New York City, you really want to dig into the immigrant experience. I write the New York City guide. you're going to want to see Ellis Island and maybe just the Statue of Liberty from afar, because that will take much longer. And if you haven't gotten the tickets to go up to the Crown, you're not going to see that much more for getting off the boat. So we try to be very, very smart about the way we give advice, in a way that we can do that maybe the forces that are out on the internet don't have the long history of doing.
You know, you mentioned Taiwan earlier on in the conversation, and one of the questions that just came through was sort of asking about, is there anywhere in particular around the world that you've really just, you know, fallen in love with the culture as you've traveled there, and a particular place where, you know, I think has maybe brought you closer to humanity or shaped your view of the world by visiting there?
Oh, so many places. Just in the last year and a half, I've been to both Vietnam and Portugal. And both of those places deeply impacted me, because for Vietnam, I watched all 20 hours of Ken Burns' documentary about the Vietnam War. And at the end of that documentary, the entire country is in rubble. and seeing what a vibrant, incredibly generous, open place it is. And I should say they've also handled coronavirus very well. Mm-hmm. They're going to be very safe after this. Just seeing that was so incredibly moving. It said something to me so important about the human spirit. And I had the same reaction to Portugal, because Portugal in the 1970s had an infant mortality rate that was one of the worst in the world, because they had one of the most terrible dictators in charge for decades upon decades. They were the backward part of Europe. And to see how they've come back and become this progressive, vibrant, successful society is just incredibly moving.
Yeah, you know, we've actually had, you know, partners, members of our team in Trip Scout since the very beginning in Vietnam. And I'm really fortunate. I mean, I've been at this point probably around four times in as many years. And it was just one of those things where every preconception I just had about how I thought Vietnam would be was just totally the opposite. And I think that's the beauty of travel. It's it's mostly what surprises you is what changes you there.
And you look at yourself in a different way. In Vietnam, I don't know if you noticed this, if this happened to you, everybody I would meet would say, "Hello, how old are you?" Yep. Because that's what they ask. They ask, "How old are you?" And then they would say to me usually, "Oh, like my grandma." Now, I had my children later, so I'm nowhere close to being a grandmother. But they meant it in a good way, because so many people in the generation right above mine had died in the Vietnam War. You know, they didn't have as many old people as other destinations do. And just bringing that to the fore in that simple greeting made me grateful to be my age rather than embarrassed about it.
Oh yeah,
not to mention you watch the documentary on the Vietnam War, and then you go to Hanoi, and the museum is the American War, and you're like, it's a good reminder that everyone looks at history in a different context.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna ask you one sort of question. I think you might have the most unique view on it, just because you're really analyzing so much of this virtual travel. My question is, we're going to get past this. The world is going to be different.
I'm knocking wood. Yes.
I will. We're going to get past this. The world is going to be different, but this will be over to an extent. But I always think we're not going to go back to where we were. I mean, progress moves only forward. And so my question is, as you're watching these virtual experiences, how do you think they could potentially coexist with a world where, again, we have physical travel? Do you think they go away? Or do you think that they actually get sort of woven into the long-term travel experience?
I don't think they're going to be woven into the long-term travel experience. They might be woven into the long-term daily life experience. Like the person who got to meditate with a Buddhist monk in Japan, that could be a relationship that goes on beyond this. And they may spend once a week meditating with this guy. Who knows? It's the future is hazy, which is why I think the level of anxiety is so high for so many of us during this time.
Yeah, so much of what we're trying to do here with travel from home is, it's not about this quarantine. I think one of the things that, I personally believe, and I know Conrad believes really, really deeply, is travel's, and you said it, like, you have limited vacation time. Travel's not about the 1 or 2 weeks, or, if you live in other parts of the world, you might be graced with a lot more. It's not about those couple weeks. It's about the joy of discovering new places, meeting new people, the smells and sights, and almost the way that it makes you a child by witnessing new things all the time. And like, one of the things that we really believe and why we're doing this is travel should be an everyday thing. Like, we should be pushing ourselves as travelers and citizens of the world every day. And the icing on the cake is when we get to go somewhere new. But I think I spend a lot of my time, used to spend a lot of my time living vacation to vacation. And maybe this will be one of the things that allows us to be a little bit more present and comfortable with here, because we can be both here and there at the same time. Thank you. And one thing that, I'll say sort of beyond that is, a lot of what we're trying to do is still, as I said, capture that joy, build connection, and get people at least for an hour out of the four walls that right now we might be a little bit contained to. And just hearing, you speak about the world and your experience and your view on travel, it gave all of us that escape and travel experience that we needed today. So thank you from me.
Can I just say one thing quickly? Beyond the books, beyond the website, fromers.com, if you want to talk to me, directly. I'm on radio once a week, WABC 770 in New York. You can get the live streaming at fromers.com/podcasts. We've been talking a lot about virtual travel, as you and I have. We've been talking about travel memories, what we think is going to happen in the future. And so everybody who's been on this chat, I'd love to talk to you on the radio too. So every Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern, please tune in.
And if you scroll up the chat, I actually posted it, as you mentioned it the first time. So I think there's people that are already there right now, and we'll do one better too, because I think a lot of people are going to want to listen to that. We're going to send a follow-up email probably tomorrow with this recording, and we'll link to that as well. So that's going to be in your inbox, but use that Google. It works like magic. One thing I'm going to say just to everybody who's still here with us before we sign off, everything we do with Travel From Home is about community. All these events are produced by a community of people who really love this mission and want to help bring that joy to everybody. The way we do that, and we're capping off an amazing week that we just had, is by your feedback and your insight. So I just dropped in chat. I need 90 seconds of your time before you go back to your reality. Let us know what we should be doing next for you. And our job is to make it come to life. Pauline, thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
Stay safe. Hope everything, you know, is great. And we all hope we can get past this soon. And to everybody out there, stay safe, stay traveling, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time.